Iran voices readiness to cooperate with the UN nuclear agency to clear up false perceptions regarding its nuclear activities, but calls for impartial implementation of the IAEA. Kiev claims huge gains in its counteroffensive against Russian forces, while the Kremlin insists that it will achieve its military goals. And millions of Muslim pilgrims are heading towards the Iraqi city of Karbala ahead of Arba'in, which marks the 40th day after the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Iran expresses its readiness to cooperate with the International Atomic Energy Agency in order to clear up false accusations against its nuclear activities.
Iran is ready to cooperate with the IAEA to clear up the false and unreal images attributed to its peaceful nuclear activities. But we stress that cooperation with the IAEA is both in the sense of rights and in the sense of Iran's fundamental Islamic obligations. Just as it has obligations, it also has rights.
Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani also called for impartial implementation of the IAEA safeguards, stressing that the agency should not yield to Israeli pressure. This after a joint statement by France, Germany, and Britain raised doubt about Iran's sincerity in seeking a nuclear agreement. The Iranian spokesman rejected the allegation, saying that the three European countries are under Israeli influence. He also described the anti-Iran statement as ill-advised and unconstructive. Kanani also said that Iran had adopted a positive approach to both the JCPOA revival talks in Vienna and the UN nuclear agency. He stressed that Tehran also expects the constructive approach by Europeans on the revival of the nuclear accord. Journalist and political commentator Said Mohsen Abbas says the IAEA treatment of Iran's nuclear work is hypocritical.
The IAEA is not really a credible organization. It's part of the money mafia. It's part of the empire, as it were, the Anglo-Zionist empire. And anything it says and does about Iran in terms of nuclear capacity, etc., is completely hypocritical. It doesn't do any of these inspections on Israel, which has over 400 nuclear weapons, allegedly, and certainly has the capability, has some. The figures vary as to what people indicate they have. But it does nothing in terms of the non-proliferation treaty. It does nothing in terms of inspections of Israel's nuclear arsenal. It doesn't even stop America beginning to nuclearize Saudi Arabia, the other major regional antagonist to Iran. So there's a huge load of hypocrisy from the alliance, which is built up against Iran, from having any even legal nuclear energy access.
Moving on, the Iranian Army's ground forces says its Arash-2 drone aircraft is specifically developed for strikes on Israeli cities of Haifa and Tel Aviv. The forces commander says the drone is part of a structure designed to, quote, destroy the Israeli regime. Brigadier General Kayumars Haydari says the Arash-2 is a unique aircraft with precision strike capability. The general added that the ground force is now operating UAVs with strategic ranges of up to 2,000 kilometers. Arash-2 was part of the new weaponry the force tested during its military drills last week. Iran also unveiled Ababil drones, which can carry cruise missiles, earlier this month. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says Palestinians will continue their struggle until they take back their rights and drive the occupiers out of their ancestral lands. The group in a statement also highlighted the legitimacy of Palestinian resistance against Israeli atrocities. The statement was issued on the 17th anniversary, marking the regime's expulsion from the Gaza Strip. It also condemned Israelis' cruel siege of the coastal strip and stressed that the Palestinian nation would not remain silent on the continued blockade. In 2005, Israel withdrew its forces from Gaza, as it was called a separation plan. The regime, however, imposed crippling blockades on the strip, potentially turning it into an open prison for nearly 1 million Palestinians. Gazans have repeatedly called on the international community to push for an end to the inhumane siege. The political bureau chief of the Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas, has paid a visit to Moscow along with several other high-ranking officials. The trip is a clear indication of growing ties between Russia and Hamas. The visit followed an invitation from Russia, which sought to discuss mutual issues, including the situation in Palestine.
Head of Hamas Political Bureau, Ismail Haniyeh, has visited the Russian capital, Moscow, to hold political talks. During his trip, he had meetings with several high-level Russian officials, including Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. The Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement has stated that Haniyeh was also accompanied by a high-ranking Hamas delegation during his Russia visit, including Deputy Hamas Chief Saleh Arouri and members of the Hamas Political Bureau. The Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement also visited Russia in May 2022, where it appealed to Moscow for support in confronting Israel. So far, Russia has been vocal about its support for Palestine, and this was indicated in Haniyeh's Moscow visit 2 years ago, where he praised Moscow for defending the rights of Palestinians, and also dismissed a pro-Israel proposal, namely former US President Donald Trump's self-proclaimed so-called deal of the century. But there has been something different about the talks held between Hamas and Russia this year. The two sides had their meetings amid simmering tensions between Moscow and Tel Aviv. Relations between Russia and Israel have taken a turn for the worse since the beginning of the Russian special military operation in Ukraine. Israel blatantly expressed its opposition to the Russian move, stating that it considers the military action a violation of international law. Moscow, on the other hand, hit back, saying Israel is trying to divert attention from the Palestine-Israel conflict.
Russia, Putin just finally got it enough with Israel's playing around. Russia has a big commitment because there's a lot of Russian Jews in Israel. But at some point, they're not getting their pensions now because of the Western sanctions. And Israel's bombing in Syria constantly, and now you've got it invading Gaza, that it's beyond the pale. And then Israel turns around and votes against Russia in the UN Human Rights Council, which is just another slap in the face, the horrors that Israel perpetuates all the time and gets away with there. So, yes, this is a moment where Russia is finally going back to its roots, which were after 48, when it played with Israel. It got burnt and it went for a moral position to support the Palestinians. And that's where Russia is returning to now. So it's an exciting moment.
Palestinian groups have so far resisted Israeli deadly aggressions with Iran's blessing. It seems Russia could play an important role to end Israeli oppression of the Palestinian people in the face of international community silence. Moscow has also said that the changing global scenario provides an opportunity to change the situation of the oppressed.
Israel's hawkish stance against Russia may backfire on the regime. For starters, Russia is a UN veto-wielding member, and it can go against Israel. Furthermore, Russia's pro-Hamas stance can spread to other resistance groups, and this could translate into military support, something Israel would vehemently oppose. While Tel Aviv has been able to get away with violating Palestinian rights, now it has to worry about Hamas military action against it. And this may end up being very costly for it. Israel's remarks around the Ukraine conflict, where it slammed Russia, saying its actions are a violation of international law, have sparked anger in Moscow. And this while Russia says Israeli mercenaries are fighting side by side with the Ukrainians against the Russians, only worsens the already simmering tensions. Relations between Moscow and Tel Aviv have also soured following Israel's continued airstrikes in Syria, despite criticism from Moscow. But could all this mean that Israel has given up on ties with Moscow and may even be looking for confrontation with Russia?
Israel is already confronting Russia. It was the reason behind a Russian plane being shot down, with Israel playing its tricks in the air. And this is a continual onslaught against Syria, against the Syrian government that Russia is supporting, and Russia is trying to stabilize Syria, get rid of ISIS. Israel's playing games there. It's trying to undermine Russia and Assad, and it's actually supporting ISIS at some points, along with the U.S., with its dirty tricks. So I really think that Russia, it's very much like the situation in Ukraine. Russia, Putin has been very low-key and very restrained in Ukraine. It could have blasted right from the start and killed tens of thousands and forced to surrender, but it didn't, because Ukrainians are almost Russians, and Putin didn't want that. But because of what the U.S. is doing and because of Zelensky, it's turned into a bloodbath. Well, that's exactly the same kind of situation that you see in Syria, and Israel is promoting the bloodbath. So let's hope that Russia finally against Israel, which it should have done a long time ago.
Degrading ties between Moscow and Tel Aviv have, however, sparked fresh hope for the Palestinians to become a powerful member of the international community that can upgrade its resistance against the years-long Israeli oppression, aggression, and blockades. This would also fly in the face of the U.S. side, which has staunchly supported Israel.
Moving on to the war between Moscow and Kiev, the Ukrainian army claims it has retaken 500 square kilometers of territory from Russian forces in the south of the country in the past 2 weeks. So the army says it has taken full control over several settlements in the Kherson region. Ukraine has also been claiming gains against the Russian military in the east. On Sunday, Kiev said swaths of land spanning up to 3,000 square kilometers have been recaptured since the beginning of a counteroffensive this month. Meanwhile, the Kremlin has reiterated that it will achieve its goals of a military operation that it will launch in Ukraine. Tensions with Russia and the rising energy prices are taking a toll on European economies, leaving some of them in recession, others on the brink. The UK economy grew more slowly than expected in July, raising the risk that it is already in a recession. The economy has already contracted by 1% in the second quarter. The UK inflation is at a 40-year high of more than 10%, prompting a cost of living crisis. The situation is not much better in Europe's biggest economy. The leading think tank has warned that Germany will fall into recession next year, as its economy is likely to shrink 0.3%. Inflation there is expected to hit above 8% this year and over 9% next year. Europe's economy is heavily reliant on Russian energy, particularly gas. Moscow has suspended gas deliveries to Europe, citing repairs and blaming the Western sanctions over the war in Ukraine. European officials say Russia is using energy as a weapon. A new report on poverty in France has revealed the devastating economic effects caused by Europe's sanctions on Russia over the war in Ukraine. Multiple indicators have reached record lows, showing that their lower classes are worse off in decades. Rahman Mazahedi.
The annual report from one of France's top NGOs revealed that poverty has already skyrocketed this year. And that's at what many say is only the beginning of years of inflation and recession provoked by sanctions on Russia over the unrest in Ukraine. Secours Populaire found that the number of people who say they have known poverty has increased 9% in just the past year. That's the biggest increase in 30 years. This year, over 40% of France says they can't pay their transport, medical, energy, or childcare bills, or go on vacation, or even buy fruits and vegetables. It's the highest percentage they've ever recorded.
Poverty question in France is one that's been central, but the social safety net is running out. It's just going to get worse and worse for the poor people, because they're not going to be able to afford this stuff, you know? And the French are not going to be able to subsidize these cost of living increases the way they did.
The steep increase in poverty comes after a decade of failed austerity policies and a deep devaluing of the euro currency. The government just announced they expect the next two economic quarters to produce a growth rate of 0.2% and then 0%. Many predict that the essentially recession-level economy will soon begin massive layoffs. That combination spells stagflation, and it's something for which liberal economics has no theoretical remedy. This adds to the feeling of unease, especially among the investor class and high finance. The report showed that a near universal 85% of France is worried for the future generations. That's also the highest percentage ever recorded. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Iraqi border officials say over 3 million pilgrims have so far entered the country for the annual commemoration of Arbaeen. Officials say the flow of pilgrims traveling to the country is smooth. Every year, millions of people, many of them from Iran, walk towards the city of Karbala, which hosts the shrine of Imam Hussein. That is to mark the 40th day since the martyrdom of the third Shia Imam. Karbala's governor says that they expect over 20 million pilgrims to visit the province this year. The pilgrimage, which is one of the largest religious congregations in the world, reaches its peak on the day of Arbaeen on September 17th this year. And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forests, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, closer. Iran.
Hello. I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Drive a little bit slower. I want to see the city better.
Yes, madam. And don't forget to visit Chehel Sutun Palace during your stay in Bazvin.
Sorry, sir, but you're kidding? Chehel Sutun Monument is situated in Isfahan, not in Qazvin.
But we also have Chehel Sutun here in Qazvin. We call it Chehel Sutun Palace.
Oh, I didn't know that. I feel curious to see it. This Chehel Sutun Palace. So, please give me a ride to this monument. One of the most important monuments of Safavid era is Chehel Sutun or Kolah Farangi edifice in Qazvin, located in the middle of a large garden. This building is one of the remaining royal palaces of the Shah Tahmasp era. The building was known as Kolah Farangi when Qazvin was the capital in the Safavid dynasty. This edifice was rebuilt by Muhammad Baqir Sa'd al-Saltani, the governor of Qazvin in Qajar period, and it was named Chehel Sutun in that time. Kolah Farangi edifice and Ali Qapu entrance gate are the only remained buildings from the Safavid era in Qazvin that is built in an octagonal building in two floors. The building has halls and small rooms on each floor, made too small in a plaid way and have very elegant and beautiful wooden windows. A porch with brick columns and semi-circular arcs cover the building, and a porch with wooden pillars has been built on top of it. Wall paintings on the first floor are samples of Qazvin Painting School with a global reputation. The walls, which are decorated with paintings, are unique in their kind. Now, at the Calligraphy Museum of Qazvin, this building is a place to keep the precious works such as calligraphies, old books, etc. The Chehel Sutun Palace was registered as a national property in Iran's Cultural Heritage Organization in 1955.
Well, I am now in the southern part of Azadi Square in Qazvin. Walking on a very nice looking sidewalk, which is adorned elegantly. And here's the entrance of Safavid Garden Complex, which has placed Çehel Sütun inside. Let me walk inside. Wow! A garden full of old, robust trees. Maybe each tree has its own story to tell. And here we have Çehel Sütun Palace of Qazvin, a gorgeous two-story octagonal building. A beautiful porch with brick pillars and semicircular arcs surround the monument, and a porch with wooden pillars is located above it. Well, this building is a remarkable example of the ancient history of Iran. Well, let me enter the first floor. This floor has a big hall with four rooms in four sides of it. The windows of this monument used to be open in the past. This let the fresh air come inside the building. However, today they are closed for the protection of the building. And what is interesting is that there used to be pools in the northern, southern, and central parts of the hall, which actually helped cooling of the air. Today, just the southern and central pools have remained and, of course, repaired. Amazing! Is part and parcel of Iranian culture. These walls, which are decorated with paintings, are unique. The wall paintings of the first floor are indicating the miniature art of the Qazvin school with global reputation. I am now in the second floor. As you may know, Qazvin is known as the capital of calligraphy of Iran due to having variety of prominent calligraphers. Therefore, this mansion was dedicated to Museum of Calligraphy in 2001, and art of calligraphers are on display in this museum. I'm really interested in calligraphy. Enjoy sweet memories in green space of the garden located in the palace. This palace is narrating part of art and history of Iran So don't hesitate and choose this attraction to create brilliant, everlasting moments for you and your companions.
Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, this is the member you are listening to. May Allah accept your mourning for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Today we invite you to listen to an English lecture by Brother Amin Rastani.
But what are those secret ingredients for me, what I do? As a Shia today, as a follower of Imam Hussein today, as a lover of Imam Hussein today, as an Azadar of Imam Hussein today, what do I do? If I'm doing something that's good, if I'm doing something for Allah, I notice that some people do something, it lasts very long. Others, it doesn't that last too long. Now, of course, there might be other reasons as well for some things to die out every now and then. Sometimes it's for the best, actually, so that something better comes out of it. Okay? Can't always cling on to things just because they've been happening like that for the past maybe 50, 100 years. Say, this is how it always has to be. No, sometimes something better will come out of it. More refined will come out of it. But why is it that lots of times we see that one person does something, it lasts, another one does it, it doesn't last? There's a few things that I want to mention here when you find with the movement of Imam Hussein that inshallah we can get a little bit of that and sprinkle it on what we do in our lives. And if Allah wants and wishes, what we have done lasts. And if it lasts, we get more sawab for what we've done. Even if we leave this dunya, inshallah, you know? I'll give you an example, like Sheikh Abbas al-Qummi. Yes, do we know who he is? Do we know who he is? Sheikh Abbas Qummi. Do we know Mafatih al-Janan is? Yeah, everyone's nodding, yeah? But if I say, do we know who Sheikh al-Tusi is? Do we know what Misbah al-Mutahajjid is? Do I know what Tahdhib al-Ahkam is? No one knows. Although Sheikh al-Tusi is maybe one of the founding fathers, in a way, of Shi'ism today. No one knows him. But everyone's heard of Sheikh Abbas Qummi. What's going on here? Now, of course, he's in the past 100 years, Sheikh Abbas Qummi. But what I'm trying to highlight here is this, okay? And this is not to discredit Sheikh al-Tusi. But look, we all know Sheikh Abbas al-Qummi. Why? Because of his famous book of Mafatih. You will have a Quran in every Shia household, and you will have a Mafatih, right? He says, when I wrote this book, I was like, man, this is one of those things that's not going to catch on at all. Like, it's never going to work. I can tell this right from the get-go. You know, you hate it when you do something big and then you're like looking at it like, this ain't going to work. I know it. So Sheikh Abbas Qummi is like, this ain't going to work. And he had written other books. And he said, these were the ones I was sure were going to make it. Who's heard of his other works? I don't know about you guys. I always thought he only had one book. He has other books too, no one's heard of. Yeah? But everyone's heard of Mafatih, but he didn't even think this was going to make it. And so you look, you see traces of ikhlas in there, things that he's done. I just remembered now actually, that I remember reading that he had said that he had put off the printing of Mafatih for a year. Some of you might have heard this from me before. He put it off for a year. Think about it, you've written something up, it's like 900 pages for God's sake, you know? You've done all that work, it's ready for print, and then you say, no, let's wait a year. Who knows, you might die in a year. Who knows, it might get lost, the manuscript that you've written up is going to get lost. I don't know, like 1 year I have to wait. We have to wait. Okay, fine. If that's what your wish is, why though? Tell us why you want to wait. You know what his answer was? Subhanallah. You know, I'm embarrassed to say this up here because, you know, we preach all the time. How much do we live up to what we preach? But look at what he says. He says, this is a book of dua for throughout the year. Observances throughout the year. Correct? I don't want to be an alim that doesn't act upon what he teaches and preaches. If I'm telling people that, hey, here's 900 pages, because this is how thick the book is, by the way. Here's 900 pages of du'as from the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, from the Imams alayhi wasallam. I'm not going to tell people that they can do this while I haven't done it first. So he spends 1 year performing all of what he has prescribed in there. Then it's okay to go for print. These things, brothers and sisters, who knows about these things? Allah knows about these things. And so Allah gives a barakah where he won't give anywhere else. Who cares where the money is? Who cares where the spotlight and the fame and glory is? Where is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? If Allah is in a barren desert by the name of Karbala, his satisfaction is there, then the barakah is going to be there. If it's going to be where Hajar is going back and forth, that's where it's going to get, the barakah is going to come. Until today we see the barakah. All right. So we want to talk about this. What are those, maybe 7, 8, 9, 10, depending on how you categorize them. What are those things? Number one, Allah's will itself. The irada of Allah itself. Number one. If Allah has willed something, if Allah has willed Karbala and Ashura to take place, then there must be some good reason for it. If Imam Hussein steps up and lives up to the will of Allah, the command of Allah, then you can be sure wonders will happen. And yes, we see the outcome today, till today. And so if Allah wants something, if Allah's will is there, I have to understand, in the short run, long run, it's going to be better for everybody. And so where does that put us with all the commands of Allah towards us? This is wajib, this is haram, this is wajib, this is haram. But of course, this was the biggest one. And so there's a plan here. Allah has willed, if you live up to that, it's going to do wonders. The same way with Hajar alayhi salam. The same way we have anything that Allah has willed and planned, if we carry it out properly, it will do wonders. Look at this, look. You have Hajj. You have Umrah. Everyone's paying millions of dollars a year to go for these things. Like, who cares? But no. Everyone's in love with Hajj. Everyone's in love with Umrah. Ramadan. I mean, when we're kids growing up, we might not like it too much. But like, you look around, everyone's happy when Ramadan comes. Everyone's decorating the home when Ramadan comes. Why? This is something Allah willed. Throughout the year, if I don't want to eat, it's going to be the worst experience ever. But like, when you know Allah's satisfaction is there, there's a blessing, there's a barakah there. Yeah? And if you're in an Islamic country, even better. It's even more beautiful, right? But even here, when we're a minority within a minority within a minority, yeah, still we get those vibes. We get those good feelings. Ramadan is about not eating though, not drinking. What are you talking about? Allah's will is there. Other examples. In this month of Ramadan, you have the night of Qadr. Who's going to stay up all night? I don't know about how people do it. Personally, sometimes I look at people like, mashallah, I got to go home. Also, although I go home and I'll do my ibadah there if I can, but like, they're doing it together, mashallah. The night of Qadr. Why? Because Allah's will is there. I can go on and on. Eid al-Fitr, Eid al-Adha. Dude, I didn't see you coming to the programs in Ramadan, but I see you on Eid. It's all good. No problem. Yeah? No love lost. It's all right. You get hundreds, if not thousands, for namaz Eid. But it's a namaz. You got to wake up early. Yeah? Still, people enjoy it. Why? Allah's will. Plus, Allah says haram to fast on that day, right? The day of Arafah. And so Muharram and Safar are no exception. Allah's will. That is one of the secret ingredients. And so as a result, من أراد الله بالخير قذف في قلبه حب الحسين وحب زيارته. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, if he loves somebody, he puts that love in their heart of Hussein. All right. So now, if Allah's will is there, how is he going to pull it off though? Is he going to just tell us, I have willed this? No. He will look at me, and I'm speaking about me right now personally. Say, this guy, he likes to be given rewards. Let me give him a few lollipops for this. Spiritual lollipops. All right? So he will take the rewards up of things. That's what he does. So in Ramadan, why is everyone interested in Quran in Ramadan? We do the math. Like, okay, one verse equals the whole Quran. Like, why not? And so it is a double-edged sword, because after Ramadan, some people might feel like, oh, it's not worth it anymore. That's not good. Okay? We should have a talk about that later, inshallah. That's not good, but look, at the end of the day, Allah knows who He's dealing with. He's dealing with us. And so if He's dealing with us, He knows what gets our attention. So if He wills something, this is how He will make it big. He will do it through the rewards. So Quran, Hajj, Umrah, all these things that I mentioned, you will find that there are huge rewards for them. Well, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has done the same thing for Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Oh, Hussein, you'll live forever. To Allah, whenever I face troubles in my life, I close my eyes and see your shrine and call back every time. Oh, Hussein, you're the love of my heart. You are the light of my eyes. I swear to Allah, until my last breath, I will remember Hussein.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Russian President Vladimir Putin has recently said Western countries are hurting everyone, including their own people. And he was right. Believe it or not, the world is going to be multipolar as world economies are exhausted by the US military and financial bullying. And when we talk about the US decline, we cannot avoid talking about de-dollarization and end of dollar hegemony in the world. So efforts are on the way to topple this hegemony. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media for further details. This is the second part. According to Global Times, Putin said Russia is abandoning the use of the US dollar and British pound, as the US has undermined the foundational world economic system and the two currencies have thus lost credibility. Russian natural gas producer Gazprom and Chinese oil major CNPC will shift to payments in rubles and yuan for gas supplies to China, TASS reported recently. Myanmar also announced recently that it is purchasing Russian oil products in rubles. Experts said the move by Russian and Chinese energy companies, when fully implemented, will remove a large chunk of international energy trade away from the dollar-based international payment system. Also, the current environment with a group of seven countries trying to cap the price of Russian oil exports and a temporary shift in global energy mix toward to fossil fuels. China's imports of Russian energy is set to see further growth. Jin Li, an associate professor with China University of Petroleum, told the Global Times recently. China is the top investor and biggest trading partner for the Russian Far East. In 2021, trade with the region grew by 28% to $14 billion, and 54 Chinese invested projects with a total investment of $14.7 billion were used in infrastructure, energy, agriculture, or sectors related to the Arctic shipping route. Alex Cao, a Chinese entrepreneur participating in the forum, said the EEF brings together the heads of almost all big Russian firms and is an important platform for his company to develop business ties with. On account of the increased financial cooperation between China and Russia under the current environment, he intends to seek to ink a number of financial agreements with Russian banks to fuel the development of his company, which is in the agriculture sector, Cao said. Bilateral financial cooperation has seen progress in recent months as the use of Chinese yuan continues to expand in Russia. Big Russian companies, including Russia's largest gold miner, PJSC Polyus, and Russian aluminum company, Ryusal, have issued yuan-denominated bonds in the Russian market as Russian market players explore the yuan as an alternative to the US dollar and the euro. China's trade with Russia has surging 31.4% year-on-year from January to August to $117.2 billion in the dollar terms, data from China's General Administration of Customs showed recently. China's imports from Russia surged by 50.7% to reach $72.95 billion during the period. Russian Economic Development Minister Maxim Reshetnikov told reporters on the sidelines of the EEF that trade between the two countries is expected to reach an all-time high of $170 billion by the end of the year, on track to meet a stated goal of increasing trade turnover to $200 billion by 2024. The Russian minister added that these figures are confirmation of the joint work between Russia and China in many areas, including resolving export-import problems and ensuring the uninterrupted supply of goods and unhindered movement of goods through border checkpoints despite the current COVID restrictions. Many traders have abandoned the overland railway trade route due to uncertainty in the current environment, and as a result, the residential population of the small border city has declined by one quarter, Sun said. Also, RT reported recently that sanctioned pressure by some Western countries is spurring heightened demand for industrial capacity, and said this could be a major opportunity for cooperation with China. The pressure by Western sanctions has forced Russia to ramp up its efforts to launch new factories and enterprises, said Eugenie Markin, executive director of the Russian-Chinese Business Council. Joint projects in the sphere of production of new plants and enterprises are among the most important areas, Markin told RT. A Russian foreign ministry official told media outlets in Moscow recently that Russia and China are exploring 79 deals that could amount to a total sum of $160 billion. The official said Russia welcomes investment from China, unlike the US, which treats such investment in a doubtful and hostile light. The EEF has seen the inking of over 150 deals worth 1.53 trillion rubles. China fielded the largest delegation to the forum with 205 representatives on site. And also, according to China briefing, despite reports elsewhere to the contrary, Chinese Belt and Road Initiative investment into Russia has not dried up. It's just that it has flown under the radar or has not been officially notified. In fact, a plethora of new infrastructure investments have or are about to reach maturity, including in nuclear power, as well as other energy projects. The gas pricing of the planned Power of Siberia 2 pipeline via Mongolia has been agreed, now coming into development or online. Other important self-sufficiency related intent comes in that China has agreed with Gazprom, Russia's main gas provider, to pay for Russian gas in rubles and Chinese yuan, shutting the US dollar out of one of the largest ongoing energy transactions in the world.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is a part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with Friday prayer leaders from across the country in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on July 27, 2022.
When I said there were people who stood up firmly against arrows and swords, but they were struck down when it came to suspicions and doubts, worldly greed is somewhat involved in this. This should also be taken into consideration. What world or dunya do we mean? Each person's world or dunya is different. One person's dunya is their wealth. Someone else's dunya is their position. Another person's dunya is their lusts. Different people have different worlds, dunyas, and these are all considered to be worldly desires. People may try to justify these desires, but they are still worldly greed. These also play a part. So, as I said, the Friday prayer sermons should be fundamental and focused on presenting rich content and strong logic concerning the essential issues of the revolution, such as justice. Justice is a very important issue. Think about it, work on it, speak about it. Also speak about independence. Independence is a very important matter. The issues of supporting the underprivileged and uniting the world of Islam are also very significant issues. Give people awareness and insight.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
These things that I have mentioned are also true for the upcoming Muharram sermons, and you should be able to see the results in the following Friday prayers. So, if what you're doing is successful, you should be able to see it in the people coming to the Friday prayers. If you notice that what you're doing was not effective in attracting a larger audience, there is something wrong with what you're doing. Find those flaws and fix them. We cannot say the reason for this lack of attention is that people have lost their beliefs and have become less religious. Some people say such things. It truly seems they are talking without having thought about what they're saying and are suggesting that the people have become less religious. No, that's not the case at all. They're not less religious. Just look at the Ghadir celebrations and the massive gatherings for the ceremonies and speeches during the months of Muharram and Safar. Who are the people who attend these ceremonies? There are people. Look at the morning ceremonies, the religious ceremonies, the Arba'in Wuk. Who are these people? These are our people.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.